Evolutionary.org presents Evolutionary Hardcore Podcast with your co-hosts, Steve from the American Underground and Mobster from the UK Iron Den. Get ready for the most hardcore and underground info in the industry. And here we go. 10, 9, 8, 7, 6...
Evolution.org Hardcore 2.0 episode 199 is coming your way. Today we're talking about injection timing and tips by Parapharma. And this is going to be an important episode. One of the things when I do my one-on-one consultations, and you guys can always reach out to me on the forums if you're interested in doing a one-on-one consultation. We can go over so many different things. But one of the things that I get hit up a lot on when I'm doing the actual consultations, this is a very important topic. It's injections. And it's amazing that more people out there don't try to improve their injection technique because it's very important. We've seen people injecting steroids for years who are not doing it correctly and who don't know the simple tips and tricks that we're going to talk about on this podcast. So it's a very important podcast. We'll talk about injection timing. That's going to be the topic. We're also going to talk about different tips. We're going to talk about what not to do. Because a lot of things can happen and a lot of things can go wrong when you're injecting. And it's very, very important to know that. We're also going to talk about short and long ester options from Parapharma to inject, maybe some different ideas on your next cycle. We're going to talk about Parapharma, why it's an A-plus brand and why it's so important. One of the things that Parapharma does well is they have proper gear. Proper gear that won't give you a lot of problems, infections, post-injection pain, all this stuff, soreness. And that's part of injecting as well, because you don't want any of that as well. So this is a very important topic. First, to remind everyone, we are on Spotify. We are on Apple. We are on different platforms. No matter where you're listening to us on, best thing you can do if you want to keep this podcast going is like, subscribe, give us a rating, drop a comment, all that stuff. That helps the algorithms pick us up. Because we don't do what other podcasts do. We don't go buy followers. We don't buy views. You see these other podcasts come up. And like within like 10 minutes, it's an hour podcast, but magically within like 5 or 10 minutes, they have like 100,000 views. Obviously, it's fake. Okay, so they cheat and they do all this nonsense to make it look like they have more views than they do. We don't do that. We are a completely organic podcast built from the ground up. We started this podcast with just like a few listeners. We've built this. Now we get anywhere from 50 to 100,000 views within the first 2 weeks of each episode. So we're growing this podcast organically. We want to hit a million. We want to hit a million. So you're going to help us get there. And we're going to continue bringing you this information like we are going to do. So let's start this, Mobster. The crux of the title, does time when you inject matter? Why don't you start us off on this?
Yeah. So as I said to Steve in the pre-show, if this was all we were doing, this would be a five-minute show. But I'm going to give you examples of when it might matter. But for the most part, let's keep things kind of simple. The great and vast majority of our listeners, the great and vast majority of people on our forum, Steve, will never compete. And very few of you are going to be doing photo shoots. A few of you might want to get ready for the beach and you haven't got long. You haven't given yourself a long time, which you probably should. To get ready to look good for the beach. You might have been a surprise holiday by the wife, a girlfriend, a boyfriend, whatever. But for the great and vast majority of people, I'd say about 80 or 90% of our listeners, there is little reason for you to be using a sort of personal preference. The shorter esters, the faster acting products that are available from Parapharma. So for the most part, we're talking about testing amphates, excipionate, so most of the blends, which are mixed with esters and so on and so forth. And that really means that these products are kind of, although testosterone, whatever form it comes in, Steve, as you know, kind of starts working pretty much straight away. Some products need to build up in your system and take a while for you to feel the effects. So the idea, for example, and I think this is where the original post came from, that for, you know, if I'm going to train at 4 o'clock in the afternoon, 5 o'clock in the afternoon when the gyms are busiest, what's the best time for me to inject before I go to the gym? It doesn't really fucking matter. If it's your day to pin whenever you like. You know, if 10 o'clock in the morning is fine. 3 o'clock in the afternoon is fine. It doesn't matter because you're, again, it's going to take a while to build up in your system. It's going to take a while for your effect. I have heard, Steve, and I'm literally thinking of a person, and I spoke to them this morning, but I talked to the gym owner about them. It's one of our favorite little stories that a buddy of ours, and it was purely psychological, purely the placebo effect that he would have a jab of test, meaning typically cypionate or Enanthate, and then he was ready to go to the gym. And that was purely the idea of having this product and then going to the gym because I've got testosterone in my system. In reality, you'd have had testosterone in your system last week or the last time he injected and so on. So that was purely the idea that he was ready in his head to go to the gym because he jabbed testosterone. He wasn't using an ACE. He wasn't using a short version MBP or anything like this, Steve. He wasn't using any of the test, no ester, nothing like that. It was just literally an Enanthate or a Cyprinate, which is long lasting, going to be in your system for weeks. Most of those, okay, where you look, between 14 and 21 days, maybe 10 days at the shortest, different versions, depends on your condition. So the idea that you're taking this as some kind of pre-workout is silly. So timing doesn't really matter. Now, Steve pointed out in the pre-show, and he has mentioned this on the forums and with his consults as a tip, that for him, he likes to be warm, meaning after a bath, after a sauna, after hot yoga, and his muscles are pliable. And for him, when he does that, he feels relaxed. His muscles are kind of sort of loose. They're not tight or tense or whatever else. And it's much easier for him to inject. So the idea of him, for example, injecting first thing in the morning, that's not going to happen. He hasn't allowed his body to warm up. He's not stretched. He's not relaxed. It's not post-workout. He's not had a sauna and so on. So therefore, it's going to be a few hours and he needs to be kind of warm, hot, warmed up, whatever else. I, for example, and I just use myself as an example in the same way you, Steve, my TRT jab today, Steve, will be this evening. End of the day, 5 o'clock, before I go upstairs, probably the last thing I'd do is 6 o'clock, go upstairs and cook some food and do the usual housework or whatever, will be a few minutes before then. And that's the lot. I've trained my legs this morning. I like to jab my quads. There are a bunch of things which we will get into in terms of, for example, not training a muscle just after you pinned it. Quads, biceps, triceps, chest, Steve. I wouldn't want to do that. You might be asking for problems, and we'll talk about that as well, and so on and so forth. Now, let me give you the set of circumstances where it might maybe make a difference. There are a couple of examples, and I kind of alluded to them earlier on in terms of timing for a photo shoot or for getting into shape for something, and specifically, which is where most of this information is coming from, is the habits of and the reasons why competing athletes of all kinds, all classes, male, female, physique, bikini, fitness figure, open, whatever, tend to use shorter esters for the ability to manipulate the variables in their body so that they can be in the best condition. And there will be examples of cutting long esters out weeks before competition, switching to shorter esters. And the best example, I think, there's two kind of examples where this might apply, and they're both strength sports, but there are certain particular products that professional or very high level strength athletes, power lifters, and again, a handful of bodybuilders will use particular products. One or two, I've heard of special blends here, Steve, are specific, almost pre-workout type products. Aggressive, make you fucking want to go tear shit up, etc., in the gym, especially when you're pre-competition as a bodybuilder. You're super tired, you're super depleted. So something that really gets you aggressive and in the mood might work. I know I'll say a couple of companies and a few underground lads have experimented with those kind of products. And specifically, again, powerlifters and strength athletes who literally, for example, with orals, never mind injectables, might use something like Halo testing or check drops, which is an injectable, but typically absorbed through the mucous membranes under the tongue rather than by an injection. And these are very quick acting, very potent, very aggressive, not something you would take long term. Most of the gurus I've seen refer to these products 2 weeks just because of how harsh they are on the body. But these are specifically to almost agitate you and encourage you and kind of push you towards aggression if you're that way inclined, but should be focused for a competition. They are very quick, very in fast, out fast. I believe, for example, when I've used Czech Drops, I believe the half-life, 200 micrograms under the tongue, Steve, is roughly 8 hours, which suited me because an event would be roughly 5 hours long. So, yeah, that would be the time that I would want to, for example, in that example, an hour before the competition. That makes sense. But literally, 80, 90% of our listeners, Steve's going to make no fucking difference in terms of their performance, no difference in terms of muscle size, being lean, cutting, bulking, whatever, zero difference. You're obviously going to deal with, as we've explained on other shows, the reasons why we've explained longer esters, cypionate, enanthate, etc. The reasons why there is in cycles, why certain PEDs are good for bulking, why certain PEDs are good for cutting. But for the most part, the idea that timing before a workout, if I take it at 3 o'clock, is it working at 5? No, it makes little to no sense. Explain a little bit to the ester sides and why it doesn't make a difference. But there might be, like we said, examples where it could possibly, but only in those specific examples.
Let me talk about the esters a bit. So at the end of the day, when you inject, let's say you're injecting testosterone cypionate, as Monster said earlier, it's got, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12 day half-life, okay, depending on what numbers you're looking at. So you always take the half-life, you multiply it by 4 or 5. So let's say 5. Let's say 10 day half-life times 5, make it simple. Talking 50 days of injecting test sip once or twice a week, it's gonna take 5 weeks to peak in your system. So obviously it doesn't matter when you're injecting. But if you're using no ester, a steroid that doesn't have any esters attached, like trenbolone or testosterone base slash suspension, it's gonna be in and out of your system quick because it has no ester. So the esters that get added to these steroids allow a slow release. It's like when you go to the drugstore and you see the Mucinex, you got a cold or whatever, you got the flu and you got congestion, you get the Mucinex. You see the 24-hour Mucinex, you see the 48-hour Mucinex. Now, what's the difference? The difference is the 48-hour Mucinex is a slower release formula. So you take it, it's going to be in your system 48 hours. It's going to, be in your system a couple days. But it's not going to hit as fast as a 24 hour. The 24 hour will hit quicker, but it'll be in your system quicker. So it's kind of like that. So obviously, the injection timing of, these steroids building up in your system and all that is not going to matter. This is why I've experimented, like with Tren, for example. You got Tren, no ester. You got Tren Ace. You got Tren Hex. You got Tren E. At the end of the day, when you go work out, we want the trend in our system. So it's not going to matter. You want to go and you want to take trend no ester before your workout. Well, if you took trend E and it built up in your system after a few weeks, it's going to be in your system the same amount as a trend no ester. So at the end of the day, it doesn't matter. So when you inject should boil down to throughout the day, should boil down to like other factors. One of the things you can look at is, do you get sore from injections? And some of us are more sensitive to post-injection pain. So I can remember I injected Bare Primo, and Bare Primo put me on the ground. It was so painful to inject. It's so thick. It's really even a 23 gauge needle, it's tough to get that stuff through. So as soon as you inject it, your muscle's in pain. So how are you going to go work out a muscle that you just injected that's in pain and that's sore from that post-injection pain and that post-injection soreness? It's just not going to work. So in terms of that, and if you are injecting something like that that really gives you that type of problem, you should wait to inject it till after your workout, not before. This way you're not sore, and the soreness might last 2 or 3 days. So you want to kind of in you want to make sure that you inject that muscle that you just trained, so that you don't have to hit that muscle again for another 3, 4 days, you see? So that's what we want to do to make sure that we're not dealing with the soreness while we train. So there are some things to think about. Another thing to think about is when you're A lot of people, they don't like injecting when you just first wake up in the morning. Your muscles are cold, you know. For me, I like to inject after a shower, after a hot shower. My muscles are nice and loose, they're relaxed. The injection will go much smoother. If I try to inject into a cold muscle, my muscle, it's not the oil that necessarily doesn't like, it's the needle. Your muscle doesn't want to get pinned by a needle when it's cold. So that might be a factor. So you might find a situation where you're injecting, certain times of the day or whatnot, that your muscle will accept that needle more. I've done injections before where it went in, and literally, like the needle literally like popped right back out, monster. Like, no joke. My muscle was like, no, I don't want it. So I didn't just turn around and take the needle and
I've had
just
to
shove it back in.
reinsert. I've had to
Right.
reinsert, Stephen. It's happened for the same reason. Yeah.
Yeah, and I didn't go and force it. It was like, look, my muscle doesn't want to be injected. I'm not gonna force it. I'm gonna wait. I'm gonna twist off the needle and toss it, and then I'm gonna put a fresh needle on, and then I'm gonna do it later on, and I'll try it again. And most of the time, the muscle knows it's coming, and the muscle will be more willing to accept it later on when it's more warmed up. Like, let's say you go for a bicycle ride. And you want to do a quad injection. That's like the best time, like, because then your quad is nice and loose, it's warmed up, the blood's flowing, you'll be able to inject into it a lot easier. So in that respect, it can make a difference in that situation. So you just got to experiment. I wonder if some of you out there might have more success injecting into a cold muscle first thing in the morning. Maybe. I'm the opposite. My muscles like after a hot shower. My muscles like after a workout when they're nice and loose. That's when my muscles like.
Let me give you an example, and this is where, because there's an argument to be made in terms of the science, such as it is. Okay, we've talked about how most steroids have been developed for specific to treat specific medical conditions. The whole ester thing was to make it so that the patient that was receiving a steroid for a medical condition didn't require injecting on a regular basis. There might be specific medical conditions or circumstances where they needed a shorter ester, but for the most part, that's testosterone in its original form was probably no ester. And then later on, esters were developed to make it easy to do less frequent pinning and so on and so forth. So this is something we've done shows on the history of testosterone and talked about how it was developed and how it was used. I believe one of the adverts that you and I used, and it was included in the promo stuff for a particular show, so it was methyl testosterone. And it was like from 1935, an advert in Popular Mechanics or something like that. And early bodybuilding magazines that were talking about the male hormone, but there really wasn't steroids, but they were sort of inferring that it was. And so on and so forth, right? So there's this whole thing. The reality of the situation is that when it comes to injections and the reasons why arguably not doing it before a workout is literally guys, as Steve said, have experimented with, because you have to remember, think of it on this basis. If in the United Kingdom, where I live in Great Britain, there is a government statistic which seems to suggest that they believe that there are 1 million steroid users here in the UK, Steve. I believe the number in the States is something like 10 million. Have an approximately 400 million population. Our population here is about 70 something million, a little bit more, getting towards 80. And it's still more than 1% is 1 million people. And this would be on a regular basis. Now, that figure will change through the years, same number, but different people from different times, stopping and starting cycles and so on. And you think about the number of cycles per year, let's say one or two cycles, the number of injections done. So you're in the tens of millions of people or tens of millions of injections here in the UK per annum. And then multiples of that in the States. And then again, how long have we been using steroids for? So the reality of the situation is there's probably no specific scientific data that we experiment and looking at the way the bodybuilders inject and so on. But what happens in practical terms, literally just talking to people that have injected, getting comfortable with the idea of injection and so on and so forth, is thus. And I'll give you an example that we've used at the gym. Called to the counter by the gym owner, points to me, whispering about a young man in his early 20s who just started training, Steve, and he whispers, he says he's just done 4 mil into his quad. And I'm like, 4 mil's a lot, which we'll get into in a moment. and he's going to be doing, it's going to be training legs. I said, that's fuck it. He's not going to be back tomorrow, is he? I said, the idea that he's done 4 mil cold, as Steve just pointed out, pre-workout, into one of his quad muscles, and now he's going to train legs. He's going to, and it's probably relatively new to the gym. He's not only going to get the post-workout muscle soreness, DOMS, delayed onset muscle soreness, but it's going to be all focused around the 4 mil, which is a 4 cc. It's a fair lump of oil being injected into the muscles about the workout. The idea, for example, Steve, if I was site injected into my biceps and then train my biceps, and especially if I did it cold, then put a couple of cc's into my biceps and then went and train my biceps, I suspect I'm pushing myself towards having a nice bruise, reddish, way more soreness, etc., on that bicep muscle than I would normally do. So the reality of the situation, the reason why most of the advice, including what we do today's show, is going to come from practical applications by millions of injections, by millions of users over 50 or 60 years of using steroids, and even at the top level, and even with people that want you to try different things and experiment with stuff and experiment with volumes and experiment with different kinds of esters and no esters and so on and so forth, is that you have practical, solid advice based on all of that volume of experience and all that volume of knowledge.
And let me just also add, if you're doing things like growth hormone or growth hormone peptides, the GHRPs, the GHRHs, then timing absolutely is important. There's some good tips with growth hormone we talked about on other podcasts when we talked about growth hormone specifically, but a lot of people will choose to inject these GHRPs before they eat their first meal of the day, whether it be breakfast or whether they eat their first meal of the day at lunch. Because
Insulin is an obvious example, Steve.
and then insulin is another one too. So different peptides, there's more advantageous to inject them at certain times before meals or before workouts. So there is a way to get advantages when it comes to injection timing. It just depends on what you're injecting. But for the most part, when you're doing most anabolic steroids that aren't ones that don't have esters, it's not going to matter in terms of are they going to hit me or whatnot, unless there's specific situations that we've discussed. So let me get into different injection tricks and tips. Let me kind of go over a few things. And first, and I'll bring in Mobster. Trust me, Mobster, I'll give you a chance. I know you want to get in, but let me just say this. You should never inject the same muscle over and over again. This is a mistake that some guys make. They'll come on the forum and then they'll start complaining about issues that they're having. And there's several reasons for this, but the most important one, and the one that's going to happen if you inject the same spot over and over again. And I think in the thread that we were talking about in the pre-show, Mobster, that we based this podcast on, the guy was doing glutes over and over. Now, what's going to end up happening is you're going to get scar tissue. And scar tissue is going to build up. And scar tissue, think of it as like a wall of blood that develops in that muscle. And look, at the end of the day, is it going to kill you? No. Is it dangerous? No. But what's going to end up happening is you're going to continue to inject the same spot. And then one day you're going to go to inject, and the needle's not even going to go in. It'll go in like a little bit, like a millimeter, and then it's going to stop. And you're going to try to push that needle through, and then you're going to have a bloody mess, because what you're going to do is basically pop that scar tissue of blood, and then you're going to have a big amount of blood come out. So basically, you have to give that scar tissue a chance to break up. So you're not going to be able to inject that spot anymore. So you just ruined a good injection spot because you weren't rotating. Does that make sense? Also, there's a more of a risk of infections, of getting abscesses and all this other stuff when you inject the same spot over and over again. You'll develop an abscess. And I've had these before. Even if it's a sterile abscess, it like builds up, this pussy white stuff builds up. And what ends up happening is if it gets worse and worse, it could go from a sterile abscess to an infected abscess, and you're gonna have to go to a doctor, have it drained. You're gonna have to get put on antibiotics, which is gonna be a hassle and completely unnecessary. And all this could be prevented by rotating. So let me go over some different muscles that you can experiment with that are acceptable places to inject. And I'm not saying that you should try all of these, but I think you should try at least four or five of these spots and really hone in on different muscles that you like. And keep in mind, the left side and the right side of your body are different. You may find your muscle on one side likes to be injected and the muscle on the other side does not. you may find you have a easier time injecting one side or the other. Like for me, I have a hard time injecting my left quad. Whenever I do my left quad, I always seem to hit a vein or hit blood or going in a bad angle. I just, for some reason, it doesn't work for me, but my right quad is no problem. Same thing with my shoulders. If I try to do my delts, if I try to do my left delt with my right arm because I'm right-handed, it's very easy. I have no problems. I use a wall to kind of pin my shoulder against, but my right delt doesn't like to be injected. Whenever I inject my right delt, it hurts like hell. And also, it could factor in which side do you sleep on usually at night? Because if you sleep on one side, you're a side sleeper, and you inject one shoulder or the other, keep in mind it may affect your sleep because if it's sore afterwards, it's going to affect your sleep before you go to bed. So those are the factors. Let me go over our list here: bicep, calf, delt, glute, lats, pecs, thighs, traps, and triceps. So those are the ones. Now keep in mind, a good tip on that is if it's a bigger muscle, you're going to be able to inject a larger amount of oil. So don't be injecting large amounts of oil into things like your triceps or your biceps or the smaller muscles or your calves, obviously. That won't end well. But if it's a small amount or you're doing peptides or something, it would absolutely be fine. The larger muscles are the ones that are going to be better to inject when it comes to larger amounts of oil. So you want to stick to more delt, glutes, maybe lats, definitely pecs. I like pecs. The pectoral is such an easy injection because literally you just stand and you look down and you can see your muscle and you can literally use both your hands. So there's no like, turning and twisting or anything where you have to use a mirror and it has to be awkward. I really like the pecs, but some of you may not like doing the pecs. It just depends on the person. So there's different ways to do it. Now, when it comes to peptides as well, the easy thing to do with peptides, whether you're doing growth hormone, insulin, different TB500, BPC, all these different peptides. And by the way, Umbrella is a great place to get peptides, by the way. Is you can simply look down around your belly button to the right or left of your belly button, maybe like a couple inches, I would say, maybe 2, 3 inches, and grab that stomach fat, and then you can pin right into that stomach fat. Like you literally grab it, pull it up, and then pin right into it. It's the easiest fucking injection on the planet to do when you're doing these peptides. So that's a great way to do your peptides where you're not putting them in other parts of your body. Mobster?
Yeah, the one that inspired, Steve took referred to it earlier on, the one that inspired it, but he did actually clarify what he was doing. So I believe it was one of our Australian buddies, and he said something like, I'm injecting 5 cc, meaning 5 mil, because it's the same sort of volume of liquid into my glutes. And I was like, whoa, 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 sorry, 5 cc at once. And he responded on the thread with something, but he immediately messaged me, which was great, and clarified. It was 5 cc per week, not once, and it was across 2 injections, but it was still just into his glutes. So I explained less. I said the sheer volume of fluid thing at once was a red flag. 5 cc, you mad bastard, what the fuck? That is, it's a lot of fluid. That's base, 5 cc is half of a 10 mil vial, Steve. And I don't care what the milligram per milliliter is, it's a half a vial at a time. 4 mil in the example I gave earlier on, there's a lot of fluid. So I explained the reasons why. And fortunately, he was already doing this. He could doing it twice a week, 5 cc in total. People do sometimes refer to mils and cc's, and it's not clear how many milligrams per product and whether it's over 2 injections, 2 sites, and so on. So I said, look, back in the day, number one site was always the upper right-hand side of your right glute and the upper right-hand, the left-hand side of your left glute. And there's a reason for that in terms of body fat. The glute is the biggest muscle in your body, as Steve referred to big muscles earlier on. And again, you could probably, I would average Pete, Steve, I think, if we were talking about even someone on a big cycle, even someone that's close to competition, you're probably not going to see most people injecting more than 3 cc or 3 mil, even into the bigger muscles at a time. Part of that is because, as I said, it'll run the sheer volume fluid, and also has to do with the frequency of injections. There's a bunch of things we can touch upon. One, for example, Steve's mentioned different sites. Says, yes, rotate the fucking sites for the scar tissue, for the idea of not constantly pinning in one place, even if you didn't have scar tissue. There's some argument, which is probably more for another show, with the whole idea of, and I've seen one of our buddies back in the day, Steve used to do the shows with, suggested that there was some science to suggest that where the steroid was being injected, long or short acting, the receptors, the muscle receptors, the steroid muscle receptors in that body part, in the bicep, in the tricep, in the wherever, would get some very small enhancement. And I said something to the effect of, for the percentage that you're referring to, it doesn't seem worth the effort. It's really more of a, there's steroids, anabolic steroids, for the most part, are not site specific, meaning they're not bicep specific, they're not arm specific, they're not whatever. They generalize, meaning they work over all of your superficial, the muscles we can see on our body, some of the internals, but that's not what we're looking at here. For bodybuilding or strength purposes, the bigger, more obvious muscles is what we are. And they work for the whole body. Obviously, if you then train those muscles, you'll get more of an effect. So the idea that you can inject it into your delts and somehow your delts get more of an enhancement, no, not for the anabolism, not for the muscle building. There might be an argument, maybe, for the sheer volume of fluid. For example, as Steve said, generally speaking, bigger muscles more fluid, smaller muscles less fluid. So there's some argument, and it's as much to do with the site injections and some of the site injection oils as it is a steroid. For example, and I believe Greg Valentino has made this point, where some of our top professional bodybuilders have kind of smooth looking delts, even if the rest of them is cut and chiseled and ripped and stuff, because they're putting a lot of fluid, a lot of steroid into the delt muscles on the outer head. So there's an argument to be there, but again,
Good
that
God,
doesn't
that guy's
come
a
from.
fucking idiot. I want to listen to
Yeah, I
anything
mean,
he has to say.
here's one of his defensive arguments, Steve, in relation to the old, the man whose arms exploded thing. He says that everybody was accusing me again and again and again of injecting site injection oils. Bearing in
Well,
mind he had the dose.
that guy's a liar.
Yeah, he's
I
not a
wouldn't
full
listen to
shilling,
him.
and he's an
Yeah.
extreme example. He's an
I'm
extremely
surprised he's
good.
still alive. I'm surprised,
Yeah,
but his
the
brain,
whole
he's
spider
yeah.
bite, the
He's been
spider
brain dead
bite
for a
muscle
while, so he was
infections. Yeah,
physically alive, but his
he
brain's been
said,
dead a while, yeah.
because he was a big time, briefly, a big time steroid seller, distributor, which is one of the things he's been charged with back in the day. He said the reality was I was injecting a lot of gear, a lot of steroids, a lot of the time. And a great big part of that, because of course, the dysmorphia and his extreme individual that he is, was into his arms. I would probably suggest that's bullshit, but this is what he claimed. You've got the whole site injection thing. So there's a bunch of stuff here. So the sheer volume can be an issue. The
No, I
idea that
mean,
you're
if you
only.
inject and it causes a lot of inflammation and you have tissue irritation, then it will make the muscle look bigger. But it's not actually growing your muscle. That's, you see
Yeah,
what I'm
there's
saying?
loads.
Yeah.
I think the site injection oil thing,
So,
one of the things was supposed to be that you inject the site
yeah.
injection
I
oil
wonder if people
into.
purposely will cause tissue irritation by doing a lousy injection and get inflammation and then take picture for their Instagram, be like, oh, look how
Well,
big my
yeah,
bicep
actually,
is,
that
right?
has. Yeah,
Yeah.
I'll touch upon that in a moment. Just remind me if you need to. So, one of the arguments for the site injection oil for Steve, as a topic of discussion, was you injected, say, several milliliters of this site injection oil into, say, for example, your bicep. That created a void, a bubble with the oil inside, which would be quite uncomfortable, bruising, not very nice, etc. And then the idea was supposed to be that over time, that void, that space that you created with the oil, would then fill with some sort of fibrous tissue, hopefully muscle, and therefore your bicep would grow because it would fill the space. That's a bit of a stretch, literally and metaphorically. So that was one argument. What was the other thing you were just saying? The other thing I asked you to remind me about?
I'll say an inflammation and tissue irritation by purposely doing a bad injection.
Yes. So you just reminded me again. So one of the products, the escalene, Steve, was you had temporary inflammation, and people that have, for example, poor calves or very narrow shoulders, but have an amazing physique, great abs, tiny waist, broad chested, etc. They were injecting, I believe it's called escalene, and and or they would inject something that was very irritable, even if it was anabolic. And this would be, for example, the outer head of your calf. So they might have great inner heads. They might have a great look to their calf if you look at them from the side. But if you looked at them on the front, there was no flare to the outside of the calves. Or, for example, the African-American bodybuilders were typically very, very muscular, amazing-looking physiques, but very high. The calf was much shorter muscle, so way up near the knee, and no sort of calf going down almost into the ankle like we've seen on the guys with the best calves. So site injection then, or Vescaline or similar, would irritate the muscle, inflame it, and it lasted about 4 hours. So you could go out on stage, some of them obviously made a right mess of it, with this kind of red looking, covered in tan, swollen temporarily muscle for the purposes of looking good on stage. But literally, they would be good, meet them some hours later, they've gone out for their post-competition burger or ice cream or pizza or whatever else, and they're wearing shorts, and you go, what the fuck's happened to your calves? It's disappeared because the inflammation had gone down. So yeah, there was actual things that people were doing. So there's a go. There's lots of things. For example, and we have seen this occur. Stephen mentioned the peptides earlier on. That's typically done with an insulin needle, which is a much smaller, finer, shorter needle. So certain muscles you wouldn't want to use, for example, the same needle size that you're injecting into your glutes is not the same, necessarily the same muscle that you're going to want to inject into your biceps. So there are people that do sub-Q, which is the more frequent micro dosing. And a lot of the sub-Q guys are using water-based or a specific steroid of oil that they like. And as Steve said earlier on, injecting into the lower belly. So this would be with a finer, smaller needle. And it's because it's a much smaller volume of liquid at a time, although it's more frequent. It's a lot easier to inject half a mil or 1 mil, even if it's an oil, with a smaller syringe and a smaller needle into your lower belly, for example, than it is to inject 2 or 3 mil of a thicker fluid, but a much higher volume of, say, for example, the more obvious stacking and cycle options like a testinamphrate or
Yeah.
testiprenate.
So let me jump
So there's
in.
loads of stuff.
Let
Yeah,
me
go
jump
on.
in with a final tip before we add some more what not to do's. And 90% of situations, if you're injecting steroid oils, a 1-inch, 25 gauge needle is going to be perfectly fine, especially when you're doing parapharma. Because parapharma is high quality. It's not like that Bayer Primo that I was using years ago where you have to use like a 23 gauge, and even that's not even thick enough. So keep in mind with gauges, the lower number is thicker. So it's a little weird. So a 23 gauge is a thicker needle than a 25 gauge. And a 25 gauge is a thicker needle than a 29 gauge insulin needle. So you want to keep that in mind. So if you're doing peptides, you can use an insulin needle. A 29 gauge insulin needle or 31 gauge insulin needle is perfectly fine. But when you're doing oils, 25 gauge, 98% of situations is going to work perfectly fine. And 1-inch needle is going to be work perfectly fine with a 3 cc syringe. And I would go 1 to 2 cc's per injection in most situations. Now, if you're doing a super crazy amount of volume, I've done it before back in the day when I was abusing steroids back in my early 30s. I would do like 3 cc's. I'd load up the entire 3 cc syringe because I was injecting so much volume. So I'd want to do more. So I get it. But in most situations, 1 to 2 cc's is perfectly fine. So let's get into some more what not to do tips, Mobster, before we talk about short and long esters. So I got one. One tip is never inject in a non-sterile environment. And we see people do this all the time. I don't go on social media that often. I get it. It's all clickbait. It's all crap. But you see these people sometimes, they'll post videos. They're in the gym. They're in their locker room at the gym, one of the most dirty places on earth. Well, not on
Boston
earth.
Lloyd, Boston Lloyd, Steve, in the car park of his truck. That was an example. Go on.
Yeah, so don't inject in a dirty place like a public bathroom or a gym locker room where it's extremely dirty and full of bacteria. You're asking yourself for trouble. You're asking yourself for liability issues. You're asking yourself for someone walking in and seeing you inject. They could be related to law enforcement or something. They could be law enforcement and see you injecting, and they're gonna be like, "Why the fuck are you injecting steroids in the gym? What the fuck's going on here?" Don't be stupid. You should always have a safe space that's clean and relaxed where you can do your injection. properly. And there's no need to have your steroids and needles traveling with you like that. They should be in a safe place at home. Some people keep them in a safe, some people keep them in their closet, someplace where nobody else can access them. That's what you need to do. So be smart about it. Monster, give us some more what not to do tips before we move on.
Yeah, there's one on the Steve mentioned earlier on, injecting after a warm shower. So these are a couple of things, and one specifically involves crashing gear, and another one, ironically, Steve, is literally warming the gear up for the reasons you've said already. So, for example, my office here, internal office in the building where I live, a clubhouse that I own, where it's my house, is kind of cool. It's always cool. Don't have no central heat in here, Steve. So it's probably 60 degrees or something all the time. And sometimes the vial that I'll have on my desk, I've got a pre-filled syringe here, will occasionally crash because it's not warm in this room. I'm warm, I'm fine, but the product's not warm. So I will warm that up. And it occurs to me that one of the silly little tricks you can use, not only that does it help with crashing gear, literally warming it up, put it in your pocket. Put it somewhere warm on your body, so I'm kind of warm myself, will warm the oil up and make it that little bit easier to inject when you're injecting it. Let me give you another example. And this is more to do with how some people react and respond around injections. We've touched upon a show before, too, I think, where we've talked about the American and the UK media and how they present steroids. And there is always going to be a small percentage of people, Steve, that it's weird because I've grown, if not entirely comfortable, a hell of a lot more comfortable at injecting myself over multiple cycles than when I first started. First injection was probably the easiest, went in smooth, no problem. Me and my buddy were doing it at the same time, separate sides of the room. Wasn't making eye contact, that was weird. But second one just took fucking forever to get in. And over time, it's been a lot easier to do, et cetera, et cetera. Still not my favoriteest thing to do in the universe. But a lot easier and a lot more comfortable. What we've seen, and occasionally someone will come on the forums, they tend to be a new user and tend to be younger. And also, these are the same people that I would argue, Steve, that if, when, for example, we were all getting COVID jabs, I wouldn't be fucking looking at the needle going into my arm. I only got a few. I wasn't to go down and get six, seven, or eight. I got three, and I thought, nah, dude, fuck it. I'm not going to get jabbed forever. What the hell? Seems a bit silly to me for various reasons. So a couple, fine. Fucking six or seven, fuck off. But I wasn't just sitting there watching this needle being jabbed into my arm or the fold of skin on my arm or whatever else. Just not something I'm comfortable with. But it never freaked me out. But we have seen people who get freaked out. And they get freaked out because of how needles are presented. Typically, you're going there because you need a sort of a jab for something because you've rash or something's happened. You're ill, and so on and so forth. And there's the whole being scared of nurses and doctors and white coat syndrome and whatever else. And on a rare occasion, occasionally on the forums, we'll see someone that said, I jab product X, which might even be from parapharmacy. And I freaked the fuck out. I got the cold sweats. My hands were shaking. Is this because of the steroid I was using? And unless you're having some massive, which is rare, and we'll talk about why, including companies like Parapharma, unless you're having a very rare, allergic response to the oil or the alcohol that's been added to the oil or the steroid. And I think it was literally a handful of people that have an allergic reaction to testosterone in all its forms. And I thought that was bullshit, but I looked it up and it's true. They're just having an anxiety or an anxious anxiety-like response to the idea of injecting. They literally watch themselves, they push the plunger, this thing's gone in, and the alarm bell of mummy doesn't like needles and don't like all them heroin users and all the recreational drugs and dirty needles and syringes down at the brothel and all this kind of shit that you see in the media presented on the news, what your mum, dad, the jock, the sports teacher at school, whatever, trying to give you manly advice, trying to give you great advice, talked about dirty needles and injections. And back in the day, Steve, when it was a little bit more difficult for bodybuilders to get hold of stuff, some did share needles, and of course, the risk of infection is very high when you do that, even if it's just fucking bacteria on the skin. So, in those situations, getting someone else to do it helps. Having the product warmed up, like I just said, helps because then you're not worried about cold oil going in or the quote unquote thicker oil going in. it doesn't become hard to push the plunger. You're anxious about the right technique you've used. And there's a site injector site that Steve referred to in the pre-show. There are videos on YouTube where you can watch people doing injections properly to show you how to do it, not just jabbing and being some macho gym bullshit. These are done properly, quite often, sometimes, Steve, with an empty syringe, just to show you how it goes in the muscle in this place. Safe. One of the things I talk about, and it's less to do with the injection per se, is I always wipe the skin down before I do it, because again, bacteria on the skin. I always, from day one, Steve, new needle every time, like Steve says. I will reuse a needle that I've just injected with myself to pull up the next amount of steroid, ready for the next injection, but I would always use a new needle for the actual injection into my body. Absolutely. And responsible. And this is less again for the injection, it's just good practice and behavior. I have a Sharps bin here. Now, there are some, and this is probably one of the final tips in this particular regard, Steve. Some people still have a problem going to the free needle exchange type places because, for the most part, funny enough, there are more steroid users using those than there's ever been before. Certainly here in the UK, Australia, and America. That were the biggest part of our audiences. That's just on you being comfortable. You're not a heroin user. You're not using recreational drugs and using a syringe to inject recreational drugs for the most part. You are a bodybuilder that wants to inject anabolic steroids, and you can get free needles, free syringes. These are obviously all medically sterile, and you can get a Sharps bin. I buy my Sharps bin via Amazon or eBay. I do the same thing with the plunger, the actual syringe, and the same thing with the needle, the actual bit you inject, that you attach to the end of the syringe and inject the in steroid into your body. And I always make sure to put my dirty used needles, put a little cap back on, Steve, and then goes to a Sharps bin. And then either myself or someone else will put the Sharps bin down at the local needle exchange. I don't leave it out for the garbage guys or the bin men, the rubbish men here. It's done properly. I guess a silly example, Steve, and again, it's that by association. My mum and I swept up when I was a child. Someone had disposed of their insulin needles, no doubt a type 1 diabetic. They put their used barrels and pins into a cardboard box, and the cardboard box had fallen out of the garbage onto the floor, and these were all over the floor. And we went down with a broom and a brush, and we swept them up and put them into a box and taped the box up, put it back into the garbage because there was no other option at that time. But this was so that we were being socially responsible, because we didn't want a child or someone random pricking their finger or stepping on these needles. And the idea somewhere that we would do stupid shit like that as bodybuilders, it's about responsible, socially responsible behavior in that way, Steve, with the needle exchange, but also good practice with clean needles and clean syringes and reusing things. You don't have to do that, guys. For me, the barrels, the pins, and the Sharps boxes, I believe the equivalent of $20, Steve. And there's no need, guys will cut pennies and cents buying the syringes and the barrels and the Sharps thing and then pay thousands of dollars for their cycles. That makes no sense. Let's talk a little bit now, Steve. I'll bring you in for the shorter and longer restore options that are available via Parapharma.
Yeah, go ahead, buddy. Go ahead. Why don't you start us off on some of your favorites?
I wrote a little short list here, Steve, and I've got the screen in front of me, so let me just go over a few options that I'm looking at right now. As Steve mentioned, testosterone suspension and Parapharma, so this would be a very short ester. Well, what did you say, Steve? No ester, am I correct? Or testosterone suspension? There's a suspension 100 product. I'm looking
Yeah,
at that.
suspension, yeah, is a base. Yep.
Yes, you've got they do an injectable dianabol. That would
So on
be.
that, yeah, just with the base, you'd want to take it before your workout. So that would be a
Yes.
situation where you'd want to time it because it's going to be in your system. But the good thing, here's the advantage of doing that. Those of you who are tested athletes or you're doing tested competitions,
Yes.
and it's cheating, but I think everybody else is also doing it. So it's just like you're cheating, but everyone else is cheating too. So it's almost like you're not cheating. Does that make
This is
sense?
definitely one I've heard that powerlifters have used pre-competition, Steve, like an hour or 2 hours before the event. And then you get that boost for the squat and the bench and the deadlift and whatever. There's an injectable dynabol here, Steve. That would be the same half-life as the all-around dynabol. I have heard of some people, and I actually, funny enough, I've got a couple of vials here, using this as a pre-workout type product. Relatively short half-life, the same as most testosterones in terms of quite some of it starts to get in your system fairly quickly. I suspect it's 50% placebo in terms of I've just injected Dynabol, and 50% of the Dynabol working quite quickly and giving them a little bit of a boost pre-workout. So there's an example. They do here, Steve, one of my favorites, of course, which is a much longer ester, which is their Decan 500, the nandrolone decanate. And that's a much longer ester. The suspension, for example, sorry, the Sustanol, which is one of my favorites, as we know, was specifically created medically so that there's short, medium, and longer esters in there. So it worked quickly, but it also lasted longer in your system. The short ester worked more or less immediately, the medium to longer esters, days and then weeks. And obviously, this had the benefit, meaning the patient that was originally given his injections to had the benefits of the product straight away, as well as short and medium and long term. So, for example, there's a Primo here, Steve. They do a 100 and a 200 of the Primo 100 and 200, both enanthate. And again, we see this is one of those things that people do argue about, just how long the ester half-life is for an enanthate and just how long the ester half-life is for a cyprinate. I've seen as long as 21 days for cyprinates and 10 to 14 days for the enanthates. But again, I would also argue how quickly you respond and how long the half-life is in your body is also suggested by your condition, your low or high body fat, how you respond specifically as an individual. So this all the averages, and people love to debate those kind of things. They've got the cyprinate. Why do we use cyprinate, Steve? Way less injections. It's the favorite, probably the number one TRT drug. And I'd actually argue that if I was using Parapharma right this particular minute, the Testos C250, the testosterone cyprinate, would be my TRT drug of choice. And I'd be looking to inject a little bit less than 1 mil here, 1 cc, around, I'd want about 200 milligrams as I currently am for the cyprinate. I'll do another couple. There's the Masto 200 I mentioned already, sorry, the Primo and the Masto. There's a testosterone, Steve, E250. So the enanthate, that's their version of enanthate. Probably number one or number two injectable choices that you can think of. Give a couple of the
Yeah. What about the
shorter and longer
Masteron? I
versions.
don't think you mentioned their Masteron.
Yeah,
It's
the one
really
just
good.
before was the Masteron, Steve, the Masto E200.
Yeah,
So I
and they
said
have the
there's a
pro.
Primo. Yeah, they've got the Primo and the E. And I believe you're right. I believe there's also a Masteron propionate. Let me give you a
Yeah.
short one.
So a
So a
nice one
short
about
one.
the Masteron propionate is, let's say you want to, time the cycle and you want to like cut up before your vacation or cut up before a competition, you use the prop. The propionate would be in your system a lot quicker than the enanthate. So that's good that they give you different options when it comes to that. So if you want to time an entire cycle, finish it off or kickstart it, you could do the prop, which would be in your system quicker. Go ahead then.
One of my favorites, and I'm not normally a fan of the shorter esters, it's just more frequent peeling or whatever else, but I've mentioned this on a bunch of shows and on the forums. CartStack 150, I've talked about on other sponsored shows, I said I've used a very similar product. This is the product, the CartStack 150. I believe I was literally one of the first people on the forum to try Parapharma products when we brought on an approved source of the Parapharma products. And this is testosterone propionate, Steve, trenace, and drostanolone propionate. These are all short esters. This required me, because I was only doing 1 mil 3 times a week, Steve. So Monday, Wednesday, Friday, or there or thereabouts, 3 injections per week, 1 mil at a time. And I've talked about the effects of this particular one, specifically weighing 327 pounds. Dropping to 320 pounds, maintaining my waist size at 320 pounds, which I've done since, and then going back up, recompositioning back up. So putting muscle back on, but keeping the waist tight or tighter to back up to 327. And then went straight into another company's product as a bulk and got to the biggest, heaviest I've ever been in my life and still kept the fucking waist size to what it was when I'd used the cut, so 150. And that's deliberately designed, Steve, with the shorter esters. Requires more frequent pinning, but you don't need to use a lot. And because of what's in this steroid, it's incredibly effective, as I proved just with what I did in a short, very, very short 4 weeks. What about a couple of options yourself, Steve, that you like from Parapharma and whether they're short or longer acting?
Yeah, and I would do, like, let's say you were doing a long cycle and you wanted to do just injectables, and you wanted to do something to start things off. You could go with, I saw a guy do this the other day, and I just want to, like, kind of correct what he did. A guy posted his cycle. He did the test probe for like first 5 weeks, and then he switched to test sip after 5 weeks. So this is a mistake in my mind. You can do the test probe to start it, you know, just to kickstart things, but you want to start the test sip from from week one, because it's going to take 4 or 5 weeks to kick in. So if you take the test probe and you stop it at week five and then you continue with test sip, it's going to take the test sip another 4 or 5 weeks to kick in. So you're going to have a drop in your hormones. Does that make sense? So if you're going to do something like that, you want to start from week one, because the sooner you start, the sooner it'll be peaking in your system. So don't make that mistake. But if you want to do that, you can make your own blend of different steroids and you can mix them. You don't have to go with just, if you're doing like Primo, you don't have to do Primo with Test E. They're both enanthate esters. You don't have to do Mash E with Test E. You can mix and match and do short esters with long esters. There's no rule against that. And then another
In
tip
that
too.
example, Steve, I would have used a shorter ester for maybe the first two or three injections and then gone to the longer ester. Think of it this way. If the length of time that you wish on the short ester makes no sense, because even if he discontinues the longer ester, it's going to be in his system for 2 or 3, 4 weeks after he's finished. And that's just a half-life, never
Yeah.
mind the actual clearance from the system. I've done this before with Steve, and I said,
Yeah. So you do the
one show.
opposite then. You start with the long ester first and then finish with the short
Or finish
ester.
with a shorter ester, exactly,
That
and
makes more
especially if you're
sense.
competing or you have a particular date that you need to be in shape for. I've done the example where I made the mistake myself of not understanding in my favorite bulk cycle, got as big as a fucking house, well over, it wasn't 336 on that particular cycle, but I was somewhere around 326, 327, 330 at my height and doing the stuff that I do, as you can, listeners will know, and from these shows and from being on the forums. And I couldn't have to think I hit a PB on my bench press. And I was still doing close to my PB 2 to 3 weeks after the cycle. And because my brain obviously wasn't functioning properly or something stupid, how the fuck am I still hitting this? Of course it is, you silly bastard. The esters are still in your system. Just because you stopped injecting 2 or 3 weeks ago, there's still a high level of the esters in your system. So yeah, look, guys. Let's be practical here. When it comes to Farapharma, we have practical hands-on, especially myself, example, Steve, practical hands-on experience of the quality of their product. The success. I did the log. People, I've literally said, if you want to, not just myself, but me as an example, come onto the forums, go and look at my Farapharma CutStack 150 log. I don't think that's the exact title. I think it was Parapharma CutStack, but I don't think I did the exact words like that. But you can see threads that I've started. Look for this one and see what happened. Zero pips, Steve. The only time I get post-injection pain is because I'm cack-handed putting the bloody needle into the muscle. I like to inject in my quads. And because I'm a big fucker and an old fucker, I just have to, oh, like Steve said, when he's doing his left side, it's just a bit of a faff sometimes. And I might move the needle. It's not because of the product. I've had zero pipping issues. I had zero issues, and I thought I might have issues with using tread. No, fine. Companies like Parapharma have managed to get the quality of the oils and the ratios of oils and benzo alcohol and whatever else they're putting in there, and the purity of the actual steroid, regardless of who's provided them with the raw material. It's way cleaner now. There was an issue a few years ago, Steve, of some of the products coming out of China, which have got better, where there was issues with heavy metals. That's been cleared up. The companies have had to do a fucking better job because users like ourselves demanded it. So do not just myself, we can find you can come on and check for yourself multiple success stories of people that have had great results using Parapharma products. Absolutely. I'm looking, Steve, for example, on the Parapharma website, they have a lab test. I talk about this all the time just to finish the show, guys. And the reality of the situation is thus again, companies like Parapharma and others have had to improve their game. You go back 20 years, Steve. How common was it to see a lab test? It was rare as fuck. I've been around long enough that there was a UK syndicate of people that I knew on Muscle Talk back in the day, doesn't really exist anymore. And they put some money, all put some money, like £100 each, $120, $130 each, into the pot, so to speak. And then there was a bunch of proof sources on that site at that time, and they were testing each source. Get, buy a product, make a random sale, get that product sent off. This was done by the lads on the forum because it was they weren't lab tests. You couldn't necessarily trust the lab tests that were being put out there. Companies like Parapharma, 100% there are lab tests. There are up-to-date lab tests. There are independently tested, like I've just talked about lab tests. And you get, again, why do we talk about Parapharma for to finish? Because you don't get to last any length of time. I've seen companies come and go, Steve, over the years, and they just haven't lasted because their quality was great and then it fell off a cliff, or because people started getting infections, or because the oils and some people had allergic responses, so now they use the least likely to cause an allergic issue. People were, the ratio of alcohol that had been added for antibacterial purposes to the oil. Hadn't it was a little bit too high because someone wasn't taking care when they were doing the lab product and so on. And then ultimately, guys, it's got the results. I had great results. You can come and see what I wrote down. You can then look at other people's and compare my results with other people's. Did they do a bulking stack? Did they get great results? Over time, cut that Parapharma, you get to become a great source because if everything else is good, training's right, if your nutrition's right, you will absolutely get the best results by using a company like Parapharma. Talk about tricks, tips, techniques, guys. Let us know. Have we given you some ideas? Have we made some helpful suggestions? Are there any that we've missed? Things that you've known, old school, new school stuff that's going to help other users like yourself to get great results using companies like Parapharma. Different things that you've done with injections, mistakes that you've made you don't make anymore. Let us know in the comments. Come on to the forums. Please note, as always, we are not doctors and the opinions are ours. It is our view based on our experience and views on the topic. Our podcasts are for informational purposes and entertainment only, the freedom of speech and the First Amendment.